Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, actress, author, and comedian Amy Sedaris once said, books make great gifts because they're easy to wrap. And I would agree with her, but I also think they make great gifts because books are everlasting and you can share the joy of reading them with others. So coming up in the second part of today's show, Karen West joins us. She's the events coordinator for Book Passage, the Bay Area's liveliest independent bookstore. And she's going to make some recommendations to us, and she'll share some insights into the indie bookstore and publishing business. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome Dani Shapiro to the show. I just read her book, and I just love it. I can't say enough about it, but we'll talk more in a moment. Let me tell you a little bit about Dani. She is the best-selling author of the memoirs Devotion and Slow Motion, and five novels, including Black and White and Family History. Her work has appeared in The New Yorker, in Granta, One Story, Elle, Vogue, The New York Times, and the list goes on. And she's taught in writing programs at Columbia University, the New School and Wesleyan University. She's also a co-founder of the Sirenland Writers Conference in Italy and a contributing editor at Travel and Leisure. And she's written a great new book called Still Writing, The Perils and Pleasures of a Creative Life. Dani Shapiro, welcome.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
It's good to have you. And I want to just share with listeners how I came across your book, because I've been doing radio for 9 years. I myself have been writing for 15 years, so I have a lot of well-established relationships with editors and publishers and, PR folks. But every so often, I like to just go browse the shelves of the bookstore and buy something just for me. Hmm. And I came across your book, Still Writing, and I flipped through it, and I thought, I don't know, it just, I had to have it. And then I got home and I couldn't put the darn thing down.
Oh, I love hearing that.
Yeah, so it's an interesting title. I thought, why Still Writing? And then, when I got to the end of the book, I realized why you called it Still Writing. And I just so let's start out there. You have a friend, a sculptor. Yeah. His name is Mark, and people always go up to him and say, "So you're still doing that sculpting thing, you know?" And you hear this same thing. So you're still writing.
Exactly. No, I remember the time that Mark came up to me. It was at a party in Connecticut where we both live. And, you know, this is a guy, he's 6'5". He's this strapping guy who works in enormous hunks of marble and granite. And his work is in museums and in, you know, the best art collections all over the world and, you know, on the campuses of great universities. And somebody had come up to him at this party and said, "Are you still doing that sculpture thing?" and he came up to me sort of, you know, befuddled and crestfallen, and that feeling of just, you know, like, really? Are you really asking me this? This is what I do with my life. And I realized that there have been so many times that no matter how many books I've written and no matter what I've, you know, quote unquote, achieved as a writer or an artist in my life, that question, "Is he still writing?" And when I realized that I wanted to do this book, the title was, it was so clear to me. I remember the moment that it came to me, because, of course, there's also the double entendre, which is the stillness that's required to do this work that we do,
right?
Which is very real. You know, you can't do it in a frenetic and noisy environment. There needs to be a quiet and a solitude, but really that feeling of, you know, I wanted to turn to, you know, people who have asked me that and say, are you still doing that brain surgery thing? Is that still working out for you?
I know.
Still practicing law?
Yeah, it is funny, isn't it? I think, do you think it's just because it's creative that people think it's not lasting and it's not real? And it's, I mean, and you say in the book, you know, when is enough? What do I have to do and prove to you know?
Well, you know, it's funny because I've actually taken an informal poll of, you know, some of my you know, very successful friends in various creative fields. And I was speaking to my husband's a filmmaker, and he had just made a film with an actress who's been around for a long time and has won Tony Awards and been nominated for Emmys and all sorts of stuff, is, you know, practically a household name. And I said to her, does anybody ever say to you, are you still acting? And she just laughed. She said, all the time. I think the person asking it means no ill will or
right,
no harm.
Right.
I think it comes from the feeling of what can it possibly be to sit down and on a daily basis try to make something out of nothing. Like, you know, it sort of flies in the face of the way that most people, you know, spend their daily lives. And yet for anyone who creates, for artists and writers, it's the only thing that we can do.
Yeah, I could relate to this book on so many levels. And I think you just got to the heart of so many things. You were so honest in here. I mean, it's part memoir, part meditation on a creative
mm-hmm.
life.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you choose to write it this way?
Mm. Well, about 5 years ago, my publisher at the time really was urging me to start a blog. And I had absolutely no interest in starting a blog. I don't read a lot of blogs. I try to spend less time on the internet, not more. But I understood that, you know, in publishing, wisdom was you should really have a blog. So I started thinking, well, what can I blog about that's not going to make me want to stick pins in my eyes on a daily basis? who cares about what, you know, I had for breakfast, et cetera? And what came to me was that not so much the craft of writing, although that certainly there's a lot about craft in the book, but the process, the what it takes to sit down, what it takes to overcome resistance, the inner censor, what is required, the patience, the vulnerability, the courage, the doggedness, the endurability, you know, that it takes to sit down every day in the face of tremendous self-doubt and self-judgment and all sorts of feelings and do this thing. And I started blogging about that, you know, not that, you know, like once a week or so.
Right.
And then I started receiving just tons of mail from people. And it was from writers just starting out, and it was from writers who were peers of mine, writers who I admired, and they all said, thank you, this is what I needed to read today. And so finally what happened, and it really wasn't something that was purposeful, is that people started saying, so when's the book coming out? And I wasn't writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, struggling to work on my next novel, and it became clear to me, and this is the only time this has happened to me in all of my books, that people were actually asking me for something. So maybe I should consider doing it.
Right,
you know,
right.
It wasn't like discovering the next book in that way that all of my other books were, you know, slowly kind of, they shimmered on the horizon, and then I finally understood what they were. This time it was out of 20 years of teaching, of writing, of working through my own resistance and my own obsessions and my own vulnerability, and that's really how it came to be. And then the parts of it that are memoir, it felt like, well, I want this book to be a companion for other creative people. I don't want it to be a series of instructions. There was a lot that I didn't want it to be. I didn't want it to be a how-to book.
Right.
I wanted it to be. I love that you picked it up and, you know, that something spoke to you in a bookstore about
mm-hmm.
it, because I wanted it to be a book that people would keep on their nightstands or on their desk that might make those of us that labor in solitude in this, you know, sort of strange, out-of-step existence feel a little bit less alone.
Yeah,
and the only way that I could do that was by including my own stories of what formed me as a writer.
Yes, in
it, along with the meditations. And
yeah,
thoughts.
And I love that you say you just called it a companion to writers, because it is not easy. I mean, You know, people joke all the time, and you talk about this in the book, and I know you do wear your pajamas to work in, but people joke all the time, you know, oh, it's, you know, okay for you guys, you just sit home in your PJs all day, and you know, and I certainly don't, but I know others who do. But it is not easy always to get yourself sat down in that chair. There's no real pressure on you unless you have a looming deadline or something coming up. And you talk right. about this a lot in the book.
Right. No, there's that. There's so much. The you know, the longest walk of my day on a daily basis is from the cappuccino maker in my kitchen to my desk.
And I know Monday mornings are particularly difficult for you.
Mondays,
so I appreciate you being with us today.
Yeah. No, Mondays are brutal because the week I've always kept very regular hours as a writer. It's whatever works for you. You know, some writers can work in the middle of the night or don't keep regular hours at all or work 7 days a week. I have always, from the very beginning of my writer's life, been very much, you know, Monday through Friday, when the rest of the world is working, that's when I work too. I think it's been my hedge against feeling too solitary or out of step or lonely. But that feeling of, you know, no one's waiting for it, or even if someone is waiting for it, of having to kind of crack the code of what this thing is that's in your head and how to make it, how to articulate it on the page, how to take this chaos and this longing and this vision and, you know, this kind of inchoate these bits of and pieces and create something that has coherence and cohesiveness and integrity on the page. You know, that is... you know, surely the writer would want to do anything other than sit down to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
it's so challenging to get your butt into the chair. And you know, someone once said it's not the writing, it's the sitting down to write. So much of what I ended up really wanting to explore is the way that I think so many of us get in our own way.
Mm-hmm.
Often some of my worst writing days are the ones that start out completely free of any other distractions or disturbances, full day, open to me, empty house, quiet, phone's not ringing, no appointments, everything's, you know, just as it should be. Sometimes the pressure of that is just too much, because if left with nothing else getting in the way between me and my work, I can get between me and my work.
Right, right.
And I think that that's true of so many of us. It's a struggle.
Yeah. I love the fact that you have a sense of humor about all this, too, though. In the introduction, you were writing that a high school student had asked you if he could come and observe you because he was interested in becoming a writer, and you write, "Observe me? I had to decline. I couldn't imagine what the poor student would think watching me sit, then stand, sit again, decide I needed more coffee, go downstairs and make the coffee, come back up, sit again, get up, comb my hair, sit again." I thought, yeah, I can definitely relate to that some days. We need to take a quick break. My guest here is Dani Shapiro, best-selling author, and her new book is called Still Writing, The Perils and Pleasures of a Creative Life. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back.
2-3 editions, and I am giving you a long look. Every day I write the book. Chapter 1.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. 1-800-495-7617.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
On the AM band at 1150 and on the FM HD band at 98.9 HD3. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Dani Shapiro and her book. We were just chatting in the break, and this has become a national bestseller now. It's called Still Writing, The Perils and Pleasures of a Creative Life. And as I said at the top of the hour, this is definitely going on my favorites bookshelf. I have a bookshelf just for my favorites, and this is going on there.
Good.
Just love it. And you are actually coming up to Seattle, Dani. So let's talk a little bit about that, because, of course, in addition to writing, you teach, you speak, you give workshops, and you're actually coming out here to give a couple of, is it actual workshops you're doing out here?
Well, I'm doing a couple of different things. I'll be reading from Still Writing at Elliott Bay on Saturday, this Saturday, December 7th at 7 p.m., and that'll be a reading and a Q&A, and I've been doing quite a lot of that. I find people really love to talk about the writing process, and so that's one event. And then the other, and then I'm teaching a master class at Hedgebrook on Whidbey Island that following week. And one of those evenings, Wednesday, December 11th, I'll be at the Whidbey Island Center for the Arts doing a really interesting thing there. It's at 7:30 at night. They have a literary series in which a book by the author gets broken down into dramatic scenes that are narrated by the author and then played by local actors.
Oh wow!
And I'm really excited about that. They're using my novel Black and White, which really really lends itself to a dramatic presentation. And there are several actors who are going to be playing out the roles in several scenes from Black and White.
Oh, awesome. Now, the events, are they up on your website, DaniShapiro.com?
They are. Okay. Yeah, my website is, Dani, DaniShapiro.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll try and remember at the end of our hour here to remind listeners again of that, but you can find out more at DaniShapiro.com. So, and Hedgebrook, for those who don't know, is a writer's retreat on Whidbey Island. And I haven't been out there, but I've checked it out. And when I was going to go, I couldn't quite make it. So, but it looks fantastic out there.
It's an all-women writer's
that's
retreat.
That's right, yeah. That's right.
And it's a life-changing place for many of the women who are fortunate to be able to go there.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about growing up in your family, because you start the book saying you grew up the only child of older parents. And if I were to give you a list of all the facts of my early life that made me a writer, this would be near the top. Only child, older parents. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, you know, when I started Still Writing and I realized that I needed to write in part about what was formative for me as a writer, several things really came to the fore almost immediately for me. And, you know, there's this wonderful book that I reference in Still Writing. My friend Peter Cameron wrote a book called Someday This Pain Will Be Useful to You. You know, when we're children, or, you know, at any point in our lives, we can be going through something that is difficult and not know its value until far later. And I think in looking at what was formative for me as a writer, growing up, I grew up in New Jersey. I was raised in an Orthodox Jewish home. My parents were, by the standard of the day, much older than most of the other parents around. My mother was 40 when she had me, and I was an only child. And so it was a very solitary and quiet childhood, kind of not really in sync with a lot of the other childhoods that I saw around me. And then on top of that, being observant Jews in a community where there weren't a lot of observant Jews, And so the Sabbath, for example, from sundown on Friday night until sundown on Saturday night, I was not permitted, you know, we observed the Sabbath, so mm-hmm. I wasn't permitted to ride in a car, ride a bike, write anything, you know, put pen to paper, operate anything electronic, cook, play the piano, basically do anything. And I now understand that to be a training ground for the imagination. I had a lot of time to do nothing but think. You know, I see the childhood, I have a 14-year-old son, and I see the childhoods of he and his friends, and these kids have no downtime. You know, they're always doing something or connected to some device or whatever.
Right, right.
You know, I had a lot of time to really just simmer, you know, and you know, that wasn't particularly happy for me at the time, but I do think it was useful.
Yeah.
Some of the pain turned out to be useful.
Yeah. There's a line in there, you say, I spent my childhood straining to hear, and then later you say you didn't know then that this spying was the beginning of my literary education. But I think as writers, you know, I've written several things on eavesdropping because, let's face mm-hmm. it, we all do it, right? And you can pick up some great lines and great ideas.
Well, I think there's a wonderful line in an essay by Jane Ann Phillips where she describes writers as, you know, when we're children, as angelic spies. You know, I grew up in a house where there were a lot of secrets. You know, there was a lot that was unsaid. There were marriages that each of my parents had prior to marrying each other that I didn't know anything about. And there were other secrets, too. You know, there was just always a sense of things going on that I didn't know. And so, yeah, I was straining to hear, and I think that desire to know, that desire to get underneath things and sort of get to the heart of them is also a big part of what has fueled me as a writer, both in fiction and nonfiction. I don't think it makes any difference whether it's fiction writing or memoir, mm-hmm. that impetus to know.
Yes, definitely. And I was interested to read how, I'm always interested in process, of course. Everybody's is so different. Yours seems to be very organic. For example, you had a story idea in your head once, but you couldn't quite get it out. And you were on a drive one day to New York with your husband, and you suddenly realized, oh, she has to be in Manhattan. She's in the wrong place. And then it all kind of
After a year, I should mention. After a year of banging my head against a wall, yeah. but it was organic.
Yeah. And you also say that you go through and you polish as you go, which, you know, is one of those, quote, rules that we're told, don't do that, just write, and then go back and do. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, one of the things I say in still writing is, and I will often say it to my students as well, is that every rule mm-hmm. is meant to be broken if you can break it with impunity,
mm-hmm.
if you can break it with really tremendous authority. It's why, even though I have taught in, you know, writing programs and workshops for my whole writing life, I don't believe in any of the workshop axioms as hard and fast rules. You know, yes, you can use an adverb if you can use it beautifully. You know, yes, you can use an exclamation point. You can tell and not show. Like, these are all these are all kind of rules that you need to learn and internalize and then crumple up and throw away. And for me, you know, the feeling of finding my way into a piece of work has been different with every single book. As is the polish as I go. I mean, I do polish as I go, but that doesn't mean that I don't end up throwing a lot of polished work away.
Mm-hmm.
I do, but I need to feel
like
I'm on solid. I'm not a messy writer. The metaphor that I often think of is, you know, I get up in the morning and I make my bed. You know, I have friends who can spend the entire day, you know, working at home with their bed in the other room unmade.
Right.
That would make me twitch.
The vomiters, you call them.
Yeah, the vomiters, exactly. And, you know, Annie Dillard has this beautiful quote about not rereading your own work too often because if you do, it will assume an air of inevitability.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that, the idea if you read your own work often enough, it feels like it has to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because it always has been, because you've read it 500 times, and that's how it's been each time. So the polish as you go has its dangers, but it's also, I think, every single writer's process is one that they arrive at that works for them and that also has an underside. The underside for me, I had a wonderful mentor in graduate school, great writer named Jerome Badanis, and he once said to me, you write really beautiful sentences. You are a lyrical writer. You just have to be sure they mean something. And right. that was revelatory for me. I've never forgotten it. A beautiful sentence is not enough.
Right, right.
You know, beautiful language is not enough. And I would say if someone were to look at my work from my very first novel all the way through the present, what they would see is a honing and honing and honing of that kind of lyrical language until it sort of is distilled to its essence and it says exactly what it means.
Right.
But that is one individual's process. My husband is a writer, and he's a vomiter. He's a messy writer. He would never let anyone see a first draft of his.
That's
my first. Yeah. So you layer and layer and layer as you go.
I do.
Yeah,
I do. I do have times when I go back and where I take more time and polish as I go. It just depends. It depends on the piece.
Yeah.
I think whatever works for you.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's why there are no rules.
Yeah, and that's what your whole book is about, really. You had, it spoke to me. I'm not a gushing kind of person, Danny. Anybody who knows me knows that. But it spoke to me on so many levels and just made me realize how I was getting in my own way on mm-hmm. certain things. And mm-hmm. for that, I thank you.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that also, it morphs. You know, like as soon as we understand one thing about our creative process, it will change and become difficult in another way. There's never a moment, and I felt this was something I really wanted to impart, there's never a moment of arrival. I think young writers often look at writers who are further along and think, oh, well, she has it made.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's this moment of a pinnacle, or you've got a best-selling book, or you've won the Pulitzer Prize, or you've gotten that great review, and whatever the thing is. I myself have had a lot of that. My best friends have had a lot of that, and I absolutely know that that does not exist, and that all that exists is the self and the page on every given day.
Right.
And you can have all of that, and if you've had a bad writing day, you feel like a loser.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
just doesn't matter. A writer is someone who has, you know, who writes and who has a day of sitting down and you know, tussling with.
Well,
beast.
I think this is awesome. Part memoir, part meditation. We didn't even get into, you know, how yoga helps you. I know that helps you immensely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So a final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
I would say more than anything, if you are a writer and you're sitting at your desk and you're working on something and suddenly it occurs to you that you're hungry or you're thirsty, or you forgot to do that thing in the other room, don't get up. Stay right where you are and allow yourself to go deeper, because those moments where you want to leap up and go away and do something else, it's very often because you're about to pierce through to a deeper level, and let yourself have that.
Mm-hmm. So take the electric kettle in and onto your desk with you. Well, I love talking with you. I love the book again.
Thanks so much, Vicki.
And we look forward to having you out here in Seattle later this week. And
thanks. I'm looking forward to being there.
Yeah, and listeners can find out more about that at DanniShapiro.com. Danny Shapiro, thank you so much.
Thanks, Vicki. Take care.
And the book, again, is called Still Writing, The Perils and Pleasures of a Creative Life. And Danny's website, again, DanniShapiro.com. And her events, upcoming events in Seattle, are up there. So you can find them at DanniShapiro.com. All right, please do stay with us. We'll be right back with Karen West from Book Passage. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
I'm embarrassed to admit it, that the soft spot of my heart. Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN!
Next week on Conversations Live, renowned photographer Jim Richardson discusses National Geographic's new project, Dawn to Dark. And King County's King of Green, a.k.a. Tom Watson, shares green holiday tips. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM and 98.9 HD Channel 3.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Negativity and fear, two staples of talk radio. Well, we figured we'd try something different. Alternative Talk, 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And, of course, we're talking about one of my favorite things today, of course, writing and books. You know, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that for me. All right. So my next guest is Karen West. And I just said to her during the break, your job sounds absolutely fantastic. She is the events and conference coordinator for Book Passages. And Book Passages is described as the liveliest independent store in the Bay Area. They've got two stores down there. I'm going to bring Karen on and let her tell you all about her job. But I know that she's in charge of all author appearances and literary luncheons, off-site events, community relations, and the conferences. Karen West, welcome.
Thank you. So happy to be with you this afternoon.
Well, gosh, your job does sound a lot of fun, and we're chatting in the break, and you said, yes, it is. So tell us a little bit about your job, and first of all, how did you get in there? Because I've heard you've been with Book Passage for a long time.
I know. I'm on my 12th year with Book Passage. Before that, I worked for museums and did programming, so it was a very, it was a perfect transition. I've grown up loving books, loving art, loving culture, and I come into this job now 12 years. It is, I do have the best job in the world. My daily life is made up with meeting and taking care of and being exposed to all the great writers and thinkers of our time, which I think is a pretty lovely way to spend your day and night. We host over 1,000 events a year. Book Passage is a mecca for touring authors. So we get sort of, we're just one of the key spots on the West Coast where publishers send authors.
Yeah.
So it's a magnificent array, and we get to host events with them morning, noon, and night, lots in both our stores and also off-site in the community. One of our strongest collaborations is with Dominican University of California, and it's a stellar job.
Yeah. Well, I just want to go back to something you said, you know, just to put this in perspective, you host over 1,000 events a year. That's some going. That's almost three a day.
I know. Think about each one. Everybody's book launch or book event is like a small wedding. It's like a labor of love. Think about that. If you can think of planning all the logistics, making it come together for an author that is birthing their book to the public, that's what our day-to-day life is like.
Right. And so you've got two stores. You've got one in Marin County, which is, you call it the mothership, and then a smaller one in the Ferry Building, San Francisco Ferry Building.
Yes, a little jewel of a store in the Ferry Building that's devoted to food, wine, and pleasure. And everybody who gets a place at the ferry building, this is really unique, has to be a local sustainable business. I mean, they have to have ties to the San Francisco Bay Area. So getting in there is no small feat. And then everybody who's at the table in that building are there because they love what they're doing and they're tied to the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's awesome. And that's great that you have that local thing. And I know that you're a huge proponent. You're an independent bookstore. Book Passage has been around for, 30 years?
No, we're going on to our 37th year. Yeah, it has quite the legacy. It's been tirelessly the passion of both Elaine and Bill Petrocelli. And they've really just given their lives to making this the liveliest bookstore, I think, in the world. I really do.
Right.
I travel quite a bit, and I think that we have the most going on.
Right. But I know you're also a supporter of other independent bookstores and encourage people to buy from independent bookstores, period.
Absolutely. And we regularly refer, if we can't get a book or if we can't have access or we know that somebody specializes, like in San Francisco, there is an amazing small bookstore called Omnivore, and we send people there. They focus on all food and wine books, we refer constantly. We support one another. We need each other to stay in this business.
Mm. Do you see? Let's talk a little bit about how the industry has changed over. It's very rapidly changed over the last couple of years, and more and more people are self-publishing. And I get asked all the time, why don't I review, or I don't review books, but why don't I have self-published authors on the show? And, you know, I have to be honest, the reason is because most of them are pretty bad.
Okay. Well,
now there are exceptions to everything. Yeah. And I have had some on and they have been excellent. But there are a lot of really bad books out there that don't need to be written, in my opinion.
Right. If we go back to that idea that every book is a birth and it's somebody's project, and there's some books that are just written for friends and family. We can be candid about that. It's been somebody's their passion to see a book come to fruition, and they just want to get it out there in the world. That being said, so that's one category of self-publishing, but there's a whole nother arm of it that the publishing industry, of course, took hits during the fiscal problems of the last decade, and so they're able to publish fewer books, and so it becomes an outright necessity for some good work to get published by going that route, and I think you're going to start seeing better and better books coming out of self-publishing, that you don't need to be afraid of them anymore. That they actually, we've launched a program for self-publishing out of Book Passage, where we're putting people together with mentors for writing and for good editorial and for the look of the book, the design. So we really believe that this is something that you're going to see more and more of, and it's part of our staying in the business to offer this service.
Yeah.
So we're kind of believe in nurturing a better book for people.
Yeah.
For all of us, for those of us who have to sell it, for those of us who are going to read it, we want these books to be of a higher quality.
Yeah, and I think they will be. I think they will get there. But I just I think we're still in that learning phase right now. And, you know, the good secret to any good book is a darn good editor.
You are so right. I spend a lot of time. I talk to editors quite a bit from New York and that work on major books. And very few books come to an editor, you know, complete and perfect.
Right.
A lot of them have had major, you know, as we say, like an auto shop, major work done, major, major work. Mm. And so an editor is really leans into it. I always like to see an editor thanked in the first, you know, few sentences of the acknowledgments of a book, because they play a vital role in good literature. You are absolutely right.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about some of the conferences that you have there. We're going to take a break then, and when we come back, I want to look at some ideas for holiday gifts. But let's talk about a couple of the conferences that, because I was kind of interested to hear about those. I hadn't heard about them before, and they're kind of different in that you don't just have speakers out there, that you have actual workshops. So talk to us a little bit about those.
Yeah, they're very different. We have three major conferences that we host. One is a Children's Writers and Illustrators Conference early summer, then an annual Mystery and Thriller Writer Conference, and then a Travel Writer and Photographer Conference. All of them are very different than some conferences you would go to out in the world, because they are extremely hands-on. And we get very famous writers to come and participate. the main selection process is that not only are they outstanding writers, but they're all teachers as well. So there's a total intimacy of teaching happening. They're at the top of the game for the craft, and they're taking a small group of people. The conference size ranges from 75 to 120 people. It goes across 4 days, and it's really about tinkering and working on your work and drawing the best out of you, again, towards that idea that we're creating better writers and illustrators and photographers.
Yeah.
Everybody who comes out of the conference feels like, I mean, they write to us afterwards, they call, they post. We have been a life-changing force in their writing life, and that is pretty satisfying work.
So what's your typical audience like then? Are they people who just have a project in mind and they want to work on it? Are they experienced writers? Are they fledglings? Or is it mixed?
It's a total mixture of range of ages and development in their writing life. There are people that are already published that are, looking to enhance and fine-tune or do something different, move in a different direction. There is people that haven't, it's always been their dream, but they haven't gotten started. But we pitch a bunch of different classes to each of those levels. So there's something for wherever you are on that track.
Mm.
We're addressing it and we're talking to you.
Right.
So that's kind of the mentor model, which is that there's people, very experienced teachers, and there's also people in the audience that are, experienced themselves teaching to the new writers coming up.
Yeah, it's
really,
a great idea.
Really collegial. Really a lot of fun.
Yeah.
On the travel conference, we go like 22 hours a day, and they drink and eat into the night together, and they wake up early in the morning and start taking classes. People just do not want to go to bed. They just want to stay around each other, talking and learning.
It's
a really full 4 days
for
each of the conferences.
That's interesting. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to ask you some of the books that you recommend for a holiday gift, some of the new authors maybe coming out. You're listening
Great.
To Conversation.
You're
listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and Karen West is my guest. She is the events coordinator for Book Passage, and you can find out more about the events we just talked at bookpassage.com. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. I could write a preface on how we met.
Next week on Conversations Live, renowned photographer Jim Richardson discusses National Geographic's new project, Dawn to Dark. And King County's King of Green, a.k.a. Tom Watson, shares green holiday tips. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM and 98.9 HD Channel 3.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Jones & Company Pets, we cover the world of animals. This week, December 8th, it's a Healing Sunday with our own Dr. Nils, energetic chiropractor and bioenergetic synchronization technique practitioner. Dr. Nils Rasmussen joins us in the studio. We'll talk about how he works and have open phone lines. Plan to call in for remote healing treatments for you and your animal friends. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
This is Alternative Talk, 1150. Got it? Cool.
And the simple secret of the plot is just to tell them that I love you a lot.
And welcome back, everyone. I like the music, Eric. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my guest is Karen West. And Karen West, in her own words, has the best job in the world.
I do.
She's the events and conferences coordinator for Book Passage, an independent bookstore down in the Bay Area. Or bookstores, I should say. There are two of them. So I wanted to look, since obviously the holidays are coming up, I started out today's show with a quote from Amy Sedaris. She said books that make great gifts because they're easy to wrap, but they're also They can be very personal and everlasting. And I've got books from when I was 11, believe it or not, that were given to me as a gift. And I will never get rid of them. So let's look at some gifts or books that you think would make great gifts. And
I'll start with a couple of fiction books. I think that I love Amy's quote, though, about how they wrap up. I've got two gorgeous books here, but what's inside them is really potent. And I'm going to go with the first one. It's called The Circle by Dave Eggers. As you know, Dave Eggers heads up McSweeney's, is a renowned author, puts out Lucky Peach, the magazine. He's just a huge innovator in the world of contemporary writing. And he has written, the book is gorgeous. It's got this orange cover with this Celtic looking, a very different gold stamp on the front. But what's inside is it's set in California in sort of like a Google campus, which I think a lot of people from afar think, well, they have everything you want, a full cafeteria, grand pianos, people work all night, there's a dorm room. And Mae Holland is his protagonist, this woman. And it goes into it, dives into the story, and you think, oh, my God, she's got this fantastic job. She's totally ambitious. She's in the coolest place you could work with technology. And then all of a sudden, the story turns. And what I think is Dave Eggers announced about a year ago that he gave up email completely. He doesn't tweet. He doesn't do email. He runs a major business, published writer, but he doesn't do any of that. So he's going to look at the darker twist and turn on technology and what it can be in our lives about privacy and politics, but it's all embedded in a gorgeous novel.
Oh, really interesting.
I think it's going to be a book that's going to be remembered. And sometimes that's a gift we want to give to somebody to say, here's something really potent you should read.
Right.
So then that's one. And then I'm going to go to another one, which is The Circle of 13, which is another thriller type book. So when you're looking for something on the list for somebody that wants a super exciting, accelerated read, The Circle of 13 is by William Petrocelli. It is about, it has, I think, one of the most potent, thrilling beginnings to a book. There's a huge explosion in the UN building, and this is set in 2083, so it's a futuristic novel, but boy, it feels like it could be happening today. And at the core of this book are 13 strong women that are going to go after this agency that's working in very dark ways in the world, and their ways of being united and the way that they dig this group up. This is a fantastic thriller for the person on your list that wants a lot of excitement in their life.
Mm.
Then I'm going to jump to a book of poetry. So I'm going to kind of jump around and give you a survey of things that I think might make good gifts.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Billy Collins' new Aimless Love. We know Billy Collins is our poet laureate. I think he can make a leaky rowboat fun. But I'll just read one little four sentences from his new book. It's The Trouble with Poetry. Because the trouble with poetry is that it encourages the writing of more poetry. More guppies crowding the fish tank. More baby rabbits hopping out of their mothers into the dewy grass. So you can tell he's going to write really funny, pithy poetry.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be extremely... you're going to make discoveries through it. And I just think he's one of the great ones out there writing poetry. And I think you can give this to people of all different ages, and they're going to fall in love with him, and they're going to laugh a lot. And I think that it's great to have poetry that can make us laugh.
Yeah, I think it's, I'm not a poet myself, but I think it's great to have poetry lying around. Sometimes you just get a little inspiration from a short poem, you know?
Yes, it should be on coffee tables.
Yes,
it should sit in
yeah.
the kitchen. It should be in places where you can just pluck it up, where your friends are over, and they can find a sentence or two that sort of delights or changes them. I have books of poetry all over my house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just in the bathroom, on like where by the bed table. It's just that people should just pick it up and pluck it up at any point in their life.
Right.
So I agree with you. I like poetry laying around the house. Now, a very important author that came through to us recently was Commander Chris Hadfield. And you may know him as the guitar-playing astronaut up in space. But he's written a book called An Astronaut's Guide to Life on Earth. And his event here at the store was transformational. He is one of those gifted individuals, truly exceptional. Not only is he a scientist and has all the right stuff that takes him up into space, but on top of that, he's a musician and a philosopher, and he's written a book that talks to you about what happened to him up in space, but it's more about things that could happen to you in your life to move you closer to your goals and help you overcome challenges. I think this is a book that, I mean, I don't generally gravitate towards motivational books, and that is not what this is, but this is a book that is life-changing.
Yeah, so that's it's nonfiction, nonfiction, right?
Yeah, nonfiction.
Yeah.
And another sort of quirky, interesting nonfiction book is The Reason I Jump. Have you heard of this book? It's written
I have not.
A Japanese autistic child who's 13 years old, and he writes to us from his autism. Like, he's developed an alphabet that allows him to write. And I'll just read, again, a small fragment. It's true, I always ask the same question. Why, what day is it today, or is it school day tomorrow? Simple matters like these I ask again and again. The reason why? Because I very quickly forget what it is I've just heard. Inside my head, there really isn't such a big difference between what I was told just now and what I heard a long, long time ago. So the book goes page by page like that, giving us little insights into what it is to be inside the autistic mind. People say it's been a tremendous bridge if they have autistic children mm-hmm. or friends or adults that you encounter. It's really a unique and rare book.
So just to be clear, Karen, he actually wrote that himself, the autistic child wrote that?
Yes, he wrote it himself. He developed a code and way to write it, and then it was translated by the famous novelist David Mitchell, you know, sort of taking the edges out of it so that it'd be very accessible. Mm. But he wrote the book himself.
Oh, interesting. That is interesting. I just read they've just made this great breakthrough with autistic adults, and they're using them to test software because they said they have this incredible focus. And they can see things that other people don't see. That's interesting.
Oh, I think they see a lot more than the average person can see.
Yeah.
And that
oh, yeah.
is really a gift, you know, when it's channeled in the right way, it can be tremendously powerful for people to have that vision.
And that book was called The Reason I Jump, right?
Reason I Jump.
Okay.
And then I think, okay, so then I know we don't have much time left, so I'm going to tell you can I tell you two cookbooks that will blow your mind?
Oh, yes. They Especially if they come with a chef.
Them, but I will say, Ben Reza by David Kinch, talk about a coffee table book. This stuff is contemporary art that he's making. He has a restaurant in San Carlos that is like a very, you know, Santa Monica-style bungalow, but this book is mind-blowingly beautiful. And it's got recipes, and it's an art book. Sort of forged together with recipes that he claims you actually can cook. So that is something that I would love you guys to know about.
Awesome.
And then the other sort of favorite cookbook I have right now is Ottolenghi, the cookbook. Now, do you know about Ottolenghi and Plenty and the three books that they've put out? They have an amazing restaurant in London where you sit at a huge white communal table. And the food is, when I went with my husband to London and ate there, we were stunned to total silence. Not because of, you know, anything in the restaurant that would force you to do that. The food was just so good, it stopped all conversation.
It's always a good sign.
Mediterranean food, but it's like, it's delicious and gorgeous and beautiful and very, very unique. So I urge people to look for Ottolenghi. And then I guess I have to close with possibly my favorite children's book that is out right now, and it's called Battle Bunny. And it's Mac Barnett and John Cheska. And what it is it's a little book. You know those little books that we got, little primers when we were young?
Yeah.
That had little dancing through, you know, the forest with the animals.
Right, right.
Stories with very saccharine storylines. Well, they've gone and drawn over all of it with black felt pens and changed the words, like cross things out. So they use the little holiday book, but then they mark it up and make it truly devilishly fun for adults and kids. Children go wild over this book, but as an adult, you'll love it as well.
And the title again of that real quick?
It's Battle Bunny.
Battle Bunny. Well, Karen West, you've done an amazing job there of picking out some books for us as suggestions for gifts for the holidays. I appreciate that.
There are so much more. I could go on.
Oh, I know. I know. I can tell that you really love what you do, and that's awesome. I believe you when you say you think you have the best job in the world.
I do.
And I know listeners can find out more about Book Passage at bookpassage.com, bookpassage.com. And
yeah.
We have to let you go now, and I just appreciate you being with us today. Appreciate your expertise.
Well, I'd love spending the time with you. Come visit us.
I will. I will. And okay. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate your time, and know you could be doing something else. And so we always appreciate you spending this hour with us on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. We will see you next week, and you can reach me at info@conversationslive.net or 800-495-7617. Until next week, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.